Retail Podcast, a global conversation hosted by Alex Rezvan Bionet.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Retail Podcast. Again, I find myself being like a giddy boy because you're meeting the people that you really like and respect, and to the point that I've actually got dressed up for this podcast. So you normally see that I'm not in my shirt and blazer, but having listened to the podcast and how my guests talk about retail, I just felt I would be doing them a disservice if I don't put my Sunday attire on as I've been sat on my desk. But I can't remember. 2 months ago, I think I listened to the episode number 3 of Retail is Dead podcast. And I just loved how the passion for retail just came screaming across. But not only passion in terms of this sort of unguided opinion of retail, but people who have actually lived and breathed in the retail world for the majority of their careers, that have had vast global experiences, and all counts that people that when you hear their sort of conversation at a coffee shop, you just want to be a part of it. And hence, when I reached out and I said, hey, can I potentially have you guys as a guest? I was so lucky and privileged that they said yes. So I'd like to introduce. So if you guys can introduce yourselves, we can start. I can help. We can start with Erin because she appears on the top of my screen and work our way down. Is that okay?
Hi. Yeah, of course.
Fire away.
So I'm Erin, and outside of my love for Retail is Dead, I work at a real estate company called CBRE, and I work on the agency side, working with landlords across central London.
Thank you.
I don't know who's next on your list, but Bex is. I'll shut up then.
Hi, all. I'm Rebecca, or most people call me Bex, including my co-host on the podcast, and much like Erin, so I have been in retail property now for give or take almost 15 years, which is mad. And I work at a London-based developer where my role is essentially to set our retail strategy. So I work very closely with our teams in Europe, in the US and in Asia to kind of make sure that we are bringing exciting retailers and F&B operators into our buildings.
Thank you. Leanne.
Now it's my turn. So I'm Leanne Casserell. I currently work at the Crown Estate, and I asset manage the Regent Street portfolio, which if you know retail, you will know Regent Street, I hope. It's a globally recognised shopping destination. I've got about 12 years experience in property, but hasn't always been restaurants and retail. I did actually, for my sins, do a bit of industrial. I did a bit of office, which makes me probably, I hope, well-rounded, but I much prefer the retail and restaurant side of things because it's kind of the thing that gets me out of bed. It's exciting and it's very, very subjective.
And if there's sort of three, so if I remember correctly, there is one of you that's hype beast and loves buying the latest trainers and sneakers, right? That's you, Erin?
Yeah, that'd be me.
Okay.
Obsessed.
So let's just sort of break ourselves into this. What was the last hype beast? I tried to get a pair of Off-Whites on the Nike sneaker app. I just feel, you know, talk about friction. Yeah. What was
the last pair of trainers that I got was my birthday gift, actually, which I've wanted for ages. It's a bit basic though, but it's the Comme des Garçons Converse, which I wore for the first time after lockdown because I kept them in their nice box for months. And I wore them a couple of weeks ago when Leanne and I had a meeting, and they tore my ankles to shreds. And then it suddenly dawned on me, of course, because they're Converse, and every pair of Converse that I've ever owned have done this. So I had to go out and get some of the blister plasters. Still haven't told my husband this, who bought me the trainers, which are obviously more expensive than standard Converse. And before that, I got a pair of Pumas, which don't look like Pumas, big chunky ones from End Clothing.
Okay.
And I've worn them throughout all of lockdown. They're the dream to walk in.
Which all of you love End, by the way, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because on your last episode, you were like, please, can we have a discount? Please, can you have someone to look after my dog when I come in there? Don't you know who I am?
Exactly.
Because you have to pick your dog up, right? Is it George? Sorry, no.
Jeffrey.
He's a British bulldog. So when someone asks you to pick him up, my face is like, seriously, have you seen this dog? He's 30 kilograms or whatever he is, about that. He's a big guy, bless him. I can't pick him up.
Yeah, I think that's why you definitely need to have someone who just holds him while you walk around shopping or looking at your customers on Regent Street.
What my husband does.
Oh, there you go. And then Bex, I feel that, you know, I'm really desperate to know what your mum and dad look like. Because apparently they're just like the most elegant, amazing people. No, don't go there.
No, go there. Yeah, my dad is a dandy. I call him a dandy. I've bought him books about being a dandy. And my mum, yes, I'm definitely I'm my mother's daughter. They are, I would say out of the three, I'm probably like the most formal in the way I dress. And as Aaron likes to always say, I'm the one always wearing heels, albeit you'll be pleased to hear I'm wearing slippers right now.
Okay, so because unfortunately when you get sort of lost in conversation, it's always hard to remember, oh, who said that they were the heel person, and the, you know, that's you, you're the heel person, right? Okay,
bit of both, actually.
A bit of both. Who has the biggest collection? Will there be like a
I actually think Leanne might have more shoes than I would. Maybe
that's probably Leanne's cupboard for shoes behind her, right? That just houses
literally,
the shoes.
Actually, they're all my nice shoes are in the boxes still here. I don't take them out of the boxes, so nice. They don't get dust
very
on them.
Very hype beast on the resale market, or the lowdown of the kids. I just, when I came across the podcast, it's fresh, it's young. You're heavily on Instagram as well, right? That came across. You talk about it. You talk about social a lot. You talk about experience. But then, as I keep saying, this isn't just anecdotal, you know, stuff that people say. You've actually got careers in retail. What led to you creating the podcast?
We had been talking about it for probably a year before we recorded the first episode, I would say. Would you guys agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we are all pretty positive people, especially when it comes to retail. And as you have already pointed out, we're all obsessed with it. And it was just getting, even before COVID, it was getting so frustrating when people kept saying, oh, you know, retail is dead and it's going to be really tough and it's never going to be the same. And we just fundamentally disagree with that.
Yeah, understand. And then in terms of the your sort of direction of travel for your podcast, where obviously it screams, hey, we're not going to have you dictate what retail is, should be, we'll take that, thank you very much, and we'll sort of disseminate that. And your guests have been very diverse, from a Instagram influencer to people who have their own retail businesses. Where do you see your conversation going from a retail perspective? Where would you like it to go?
I think you guys may think differently, but I think what we want to be doing is portraying, as Beck said, the positive sides of retail, but also the really relevant sides of retail. The topics that we pick are not, I don't think that necessarily the topics that you would instantly pick to talk about. And we're trying to pick things that perhaps are really relevant today that probably weren't a year ago, but also those that are relevant going forward as well. So, I mean, for example, we want to do for our next one, I say it may not be the next one because we try and base it around our guests and how available they are to meet, basically. But, you know, sustainability is such a huge issue at the moment and such a buzzword that we want to do sustainability. But we've all agreed that actually we don't just want to do a token episode that's about sustainability because that doesn't feel authentic. We want to break it down and actually really talk about the different segments involved in sustainability. Yeah. So it's kind of just comes from our knowledge, and you know, the every day the three of us are talking to brands, and so for that reason we get a sense of what they're thinking, where the market's going, what's going on in the world, and we just want to be reactive as well to that as well, I guess.
Yeah, I would definitely be foolish not to tap into what you talk about and your show notes in terms of putting all the brands, all the locations that you talk about. Whoever does that, congratulations, because that's one thing I find really difficult. But you all seem to have a real sort of, you discuss this on your show about the different places that you've been in the world, right? In terms of whether that's Nashville in the hotel, whether that's Japan or going to Tokyo and having these wonderful experiences. Were all of those travels part of your work, or were they personal travels? Is the first
I'd say they're a mixture of both, actually. Mm. And all three of us, the one thing that we do have in common is when we do travel, we like to plan ahead.
Yeah.
We all love a travel magazine or a travel book, and we share them between us, which we've always done years before this podcast, or emails with recommendations. And we've always had friends and family even come to us to say, oh, where in London can we go for lunch? Or where can I buy someone something under 50 quid? And I want it to be from an independent brand. When we travel, we always like to drag our husbands around places that we will have pinpointed. Oh, if we're going to Tokyo, you have to go and check out this shop and that restaurant. And Leanne will know someone that owns a rooftop bar, and her husband as well will pass on amazing recommendations, that it's so much more than whether it's a work trip or a personal trip. We're always keen to go and look at all these concepts purely because we like it, not because we have to.
Yeah.
So that's why we also thought, hang on, we've actually all been to all these places because we've either wanted to go there or we've been with work and we're sharing this information between the three of us, but wouldn't it be cool to talk about it with others?
Yeah.
I honestly as well, it's really sad and pathetic, but my holiday pretty much revolves around food.
Nothing sad and pathetic about that. I don't know what type of shows you appear on.
As in, where should we get? Because obviously my husband works in the industry as well, but he specializes in F&B. So you can imagine what he wants to do and what I want to do are very, very aligned in that respect. So it's great. We're always traveling, like some of the places we've ended up just to try a particular fruit or something really ridiculous. It is a bit weird, but that's what I like.
That's super cool.
don't you and Charlie have a little Michelin star book of everywhere you've been?
All sorts. Yeah, we actually oh my god, this is really sad. We've got a drawer full of memoirs from each restaurant, the Michelin star restaurant, and we want to create like something really sad one day. When we're really old.
That's such a great idea. I love that though. I keep the menus of like the fancy Michelin star places.
I need to start going to them.
And I use them as like what do you call them?
Sorry.
Bookmarks.
Well, the menus, yeah. Thanks. Well, actually, so yeah. Leanne, I had some friends who started I think they're in the US now, but they did an A to Z of restaurants globally. And so they created a blog. So, you know, it's more of a cultural, you know, where have they eaten rather than the quality of the food, although they like fine dining. So if you put that, it sounds like you've got a lot of untapped knowledge that could go into some sort of blog with your husband that would,
maybe,
you know.
I haven't thought about that.
And you're always on Instagram, right? It'd be the wonderful, most, you know, the Instagram thing, and then move it onto TikTok.
I'm not sure about TikTok.
So you all talk about retail and the experiences that you've had in there and the retail experience. But I sort of got a clue of it when you started talking about some experiences that potentially didn't fit your requirement from that place. So where do you think has the best customers? Where is the when you're in a retail place, we all look at the other people that are around us, right? Whether it's the beautiful people or not. But where sticks in your mind of all the places you've been for your fellow either customers or travelers? What blew you away? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Gosh, that's a question and a half, isn't it?
It's okay. I'll edit the pause out so it looks a lot more natural.
It's a great question, though.
What about, Bex, what about the service just in general in Japan?
Yeah. I was just thinking, as you were speaking, Ali, I was thinking of Isetan, which is a department store, and it's like famed around the world. It's won more awards than I can count. But there's something very special about it. Albeit, when you ask me about the customers, of course, a lot of us, you know, like Aaron and I would be, you know, travelers, tourists. So it's perhaps not the idea of community I would think of.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I had to answer that, you know, without pause, I'd probably say, you know, any good neighborhood cafe. That's where my people are. That's where my tribe is. Any good neighborhood cafe that does a good coffee, a good tea, and good food, good honest food that isn't, you know, it isn't too fussy. It's just good, and it does what it says on the tin. That would be my answer.
That feels like a whole episode in itself, because I'm already dying to ask you, where would your recommendations be for good coffee and food and honest food?
I think we each would have one of our own neighborhoods, right?
Yeah. Okay, why don't we answer this question? And I'm definitely going to come back to that, because I'd love to sort of just get a view on where you think. Leanne, do you have a place?
Yeah, I was thinking of places where like I get excited when I go there, and that because of the people, let's say, rather than the experience. And something that just came to mind was the I don't know if you've ever been to the Biscuit Factory in Cape Town. It's a really beautiful redevelopment of a biscuit factory. And it's got really eclectic mix of retail, and then it's got the pit. A potluck club, that's it, which is they don't have Michelin in South Africa actually, but it's got an incredible rating. But when I was there, I just loved it. Like, it was so different, so refreshing. Yeah. Really just like nothing that I'd been around in, say, America or Europe. It was just like the kind of eclectic nature of the products they were selling. It was almost like a market.
Yeah.
I kind of get that vibe when I'm in a market. Like, I just love the hustle and bustle and the people, and, you know, being now you're not close to people at all, but being close to people is quite nice. And I like that.
Erin, how about you?
I'm trying to think back to the last time that I was in somewhere and I looked around and thought, yeah, these are cool people or people that I can relate to. And I think the last time was just before lockdown, and we went to the New Standard up in King's Cross.
Right.
And we went in for a drink and then ended up staying for 10 or whatever, but, and had some food, obviously chips. And the people there, the service, first of all, was exceptional. And when we go to places like that, we like to sit at the bar. So if they have the high stools at the bar, if we travel, particularly in New York and across America, actually, I think the bar stools are the best seats that you will get and the best chat that you will get. So it was the same in the Standard. It felt like we were somewhere outside of London, and it was full of the coolest looking people and beautiful people, like you say. And also, you know, tucked around a corner, they've got like a library shelf, and you can come and you can work in that space. And then they've got the bar and the more formal dining, and it made us want to stay there for the weekend. It was really cool.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that retailers are sometimes, when people look at building beautiful designs, it's like, okay, what I mean, they obviously have an idea of what the customer is and the customer journey and everything through that. But what I have found, and that's why I was curious in terms of the places that you've had that, sometimes the two don't go together. Sometimes you think you're a place of like-minded. For me, it's where art and culture come together. Mm. Always there's something where you learn, and like everyone's around you learning, or everyone's, you know, that sort of.
That's a good point. I'm just on that note. I'm thinking of Port Said in Tel Aviv.
Okay.
It's an incredible restaurant, and it's got the coolest vibe because the music is just like so on point, and there's a DJ in the restaurant's tiny. It's like 500 square feet.
Yeah.
But I think Tel Aviv is a really good example of like a melting pot of culture, actually, and the most beautiful people you have ever seen in your life.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's beautiful to me anyway, right? So everyone is gorgeous. But Berlin, for example, Berlin to me is like that, got that hub and mix of really beautiful, decadent places, the flea markets on Sundays, DJs there. You know, it just has that sort of amalgamation of Schofields. Have you been to Schofields?
Yes, I almost said that when you asked, you know, what excites you. I don't think I've met people there that look like us, but Erin and I have talked about it many times over.
We'd love
to have them on our podcast. I do. I actually really do. I think it's a very clever way of starting a conversation, if not for anything else.
Okay. Leanne, do you?
I haven't been to Schofields, unfortunately. No, but I hear Erin and Bex talk about it all the time.
So I presume there's
a similar concept, which I think you both have been to in Williamsburg, the ADO concept, which is the multi, as part of, there's a workspace and then a really nice restaurant, and then a shop, which is constantly filled with local artists or local artisans. And they rotate it. So anytime that I've ever been in there, it's full of completely different products, but they'll also have like a bag from Rains and their latest backpack for sale. So there's some better known brands, but it's very similar to Schofields. And I do think we've all been there as well, which again, felt like something that you could not find anywhere else. And it's almost like they picked the things, they'd done all the thinking for you.
Yeah.
You could just walk in and buy.
Yeah, I think my only little thing about Schofields is the fact that I love the curated story. I love the fact start on the third floor, go up in the lift, come through the secret, you know, have this sort of delightful, but it just felt, am I in a, for example, an art gallery or am I in a shop? Because as a retailer, you're there to sell product. And maybe you know this better than I, sorry. But you're there to somehow do a transaction of some kind. And maybe that's the whole thing, the journey that we're in. That's all changing, right? So places aren't where you go to shop. That's where you go to experience. And then the shopping happens elsewhere. But for example, in Schofields, when you come down the slide and you've got this microbe sponge at the end of it, I was like, wow, I'm going to buy a microbe sponge now, right? And, oh, you've gone on mute. Sorry.
Sorry, I was just about to say, I bought one too. I did the exact same thing as you. You see, it works. It works. They do make you buy.
Yeah. And then they've got like the downstairs pods. So it's this whole sort of how do you showcase in the future? So one of the things listening to you, I was really curious, if you were the new CEO of a retailer and you were going to build your own retail store, what would you build?
Oh my gosh.
Because I hear you talk about these amazing experiences and, you know, the places that you've gone, but what would you, and let's keep it topical. If you were going to build the store of the future, okay? So COVID's just come down 18 months from now or whatever, 12 months from now, we're all back to some form of normality and we're out and about. What type of store would you build or what type of experiences would you like to have?
I think,
No, go for it. I'm curious to hear what you're going to say too.
Me and my husband have various ideas that we'd actually love to start on our own, actually, that we always talk about. We should never get around to doing it. But something that we'd like to do would be have a purely unisex accessories brand where essentially it could range from caps to sunglasses to jewelry to whatever. And we were both massive believers in physical retail still, but you need an incredible back of house function, online function, which makes the whole process seamless. Experience wise, I'd be really akin with the gentleman that we had on our podcast last week, which was Paul Furman from Earl of East. The way that he talks about experience and the amount of detail and attention that goes into every single touch point for a consumer coming into his space, that's something that, I mean, I totally am into all of that, like the smells, the way that the sales assistant speaks to you, the bags, the literally everything. I think you have to think about all of these things. All the touch points with the brand need to be absolutely spot on, and as does your social and your, you know, the meaning and sustainability, all of those things. The things we talk about are all the things that matter to me as a consumer. So I think I'd have to portray that through a brand as well.
Mm. Interesting. Bex?
I think for me, physical is much more about discovery than anything else. And I was hearing Erin talk about how seamless it would have to be, and Leanne too, and I completely agree. There would have to be a lot of synergy between the back of house online and the physical store. But what I would be more kind of focused on is creating a place where you've got two things. One is that element of discovery, whether it be different brands under one house or just product that you would not be able to easily see online. And I've noticed quite a few brands doing this lately where they drop product and they're not dropping it online and they're not putting it on social. And it's more about they're essentially trying to tease us out of our houses despite what's happening. And I've seen it in China in a couple of opportunities where they've actually dropped product and it's just in store. And the whole purpose of it is to get you to go to that store and, you know, hope that they can upsell you while you're in the store. I would also, considering everything that's happening right now, really want to major on the community. And if I could, I would have some sort of outdoor space where it's effectively not subletting, but effectively allowing the community to come in and use that space as they see fit, whether it's indoor and outdoor. And I know it sounds very cliche, but to me, stores that kind of ignore where they are and their immediate vicinity kind of miss the point, even if they're in the middle of central London.
Yeah. Like, can you expand on that a little bit in terms of what you mean?
Sure. I just think you need to be cognizant of the fact that you, even if you don't think that, say, Mayfair or Soho or Chelsea are communities, they are, and you know, real people live there, they work there, they spend time there. And so you, for me, if you want people to come to your store, you're asking them to give up their time and attention. You know, that for me, that's where the game of retail is right now. We're competing with our phones.
Yeah,
basically stores are competing with our phones for attention, because you can literally access anything you want from a whole host of online platforms. So for me, the store needs to bring in that community, and it needs to kind of say, hey guys, we're here. We are here to add value of some sort. And it's not just about selling product.
I love it. Love it. Erin?
I would just to say on the back of that, just whenever you said an outdoor space, I immediately now think in Wynwood in Miami, there's a multi-brand a sportswear store called Unknown. It's missing the O, and that was one of the coolest sportswear shops. And they've got a full size basketball court that's painted bright blue, yellow, and pink with palm trees, and you can rent that out as part of the local community. So it's clever though, because the only way to get to it is through the store.
Yeah.
And it obviously they do product launches, and Nike will rent it out to launch a new pair of sneakers. But I immediately thought that fitted perfectly in amongst all the graffiti and the street art directly opposite Wynwood walls, pretty much. How to use that outdoor space. It used to be an old service yard. It was super cool. For me, I would say if you can bring the convenience of online into a store so that you don't have to leave empty handed, because we've all been there. We've all, you know, figured out what we want to buy. We go in, they don't have it in your size. You don't have it in your color. You're disappointed. You go home, you order online. It doesn't have the same, you don't really connect in the same way. And I think you can't, whilst online is brilliant for that convenience, and we all use it, we use it every day.
Yeah.
We still want to be able to buy things and use our senses in those spaces. So if there is a way of making sure that you have, maybe it's having bigger stock rooms, maybe it's knowing what you want to try on, and you tell the store before you get there, and they have that full product selection before you even get there, then you're going to make a sale and your conversion will go up. So I think I'd be looking into how you can make the in-store experience feel as convenient as the online.
Yeah, I call it the stolen moments. They still, if a retailer sort of steals that moment of delight from you, it's almost like you were expecting, I don't know, when you're going to bite into a delicious carrot cake, and then it's like, it doesn't taste like a carrot cake. It tastes like something else. And so therefore, getting that back is actually quite difficult. In terms of digital experiences, is there anyone that has got it right for you?
Yes, it's two things, isn't it? Social's quite different to the online experience. Someone's social content can be very different to when you're on their website, for example, buying something.
Yeah.
A brand I love the online experience, and we actually spoke about this in our last podcast, is Farfetch.
Yeah.
Because that is seamless. I mean, you literally accidentally buy things like that. That whatever they've done there is unbelievable, because I do accidentally buy things. But this social.
Oh, there goes £1,000. How did that bag get in my basket?
Just don't tell my husband, I'll hide it. But social's slightly different. And I think I go on social for a different purpose, perhaps.
Okay.
To probably do more stalking, right? And what I think is quite interesting is at the moment in time that people decide, you know what, I feel like we know our customers well enough, I am confident enough to go and do that leap into the physical. And I did something with a pop-up recently with a ladies fashion brand called Hayley Menzies down in Chelsea, and she's agreed to be on one of her podcasts, which is amazing. We're really excited to have her on. But when I asked her that question, she said it's really simple because it just feels like the right time. And she said that during lockdown and all the way through since the beginning of the pandemic, her online sales boomed. And first of all, she's really grateful that the customers kept the spirit of her brand and basically kept her business alive during that really difficult time. And she ended up spending a lot of time by herself, individually packing and wrapping all of the orders. And during that time, she said she just had the moment of realization that she wants to give back to her customers, and she wants to do something different and to change from purely online to that direct to consumer. So she said, the only thing I can do now is open the shop, and I can thank people for keeping me, you know, to support me and to come to the store. And when you go there, the service is amazing. Again, like Leanne said, it's quite like Colourful Standard. It's their first proper shop. You walk in, they talk to you about the brand, you touch and feel, it smells amazing. You wouldn't know it was a pop-up. And I think we're going to see more and more of that, of these brands that continue to trade well, want to give back, but also know it's the right time and that their sales online are helping to support that as well. For us, it's again, like we keep saying, it's such an exciting time because of these brand interactions that we're having.
Is that loungewear? What's the product?
No, she sells her best known product is a tiger printed cardigan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she does dresses. And during lockdown, she launched t-shirts and they sold out threefold.
Wow. Okay.
So people were buying a nice t-shirt to wear on a Zoom call and a nice cardigan. It's definitely not loungewear, but it's not formal wear either. She sits somewhere in the middle.
And what was it called? What's the name?
Hayley Menzies.
Hayley Menzies. Okay. Everyone, Hayley Menzies, pop-up store in Chelsea?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bex, you have, in terms of, we were just talking about technology in terms of it playing a part in the physical estate. And I feel your global view here, because you have this sort of, you've looked at all of the sort of real estate across the world. Is there anywhere that's getting it right? Is there anywhere that you've been to an experience that's been digital and physical?
Asia live in the future. Asia get it right every time. Asia, for me, I'll give you the reasons why. First of all, most countries in Asia have a culture of service, to Erin's point earlier, that we could never replicate. We can only dream of in Europe, because there is a pride, like when you go to Thailand or Vietnam, there is a pride in serving other people that we culturally just lack. And it doesn't matter if it's Europe, US, the rest of the Americas, we just don't have that passion for it. And I also think they live in the future because they personally, I think they take technology for what it is, and they take it for something that can enhance their lives rather than, you know, be some sort of weird add-on when you're in a store. I know us three talk about this all the time, where you walk into a shop and like there's an iPad on the side and you're expected to, you know, interact with it, and you kind of think, but what's the point? I'm here, like I'm here IRL, right? I'm here in real life. Why would I want to interact with an iPad? Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the way that they started to do AR and VR out in China, mainland China, and another place that I visited and I've lived in Asia, it's mind-blowing, actually, when, you know, you have that first experience of, like, I know Aaron had this too. You go to Seoul and you literally feel like you're walking around in the future. You
know? Yeah.
Simple as.
It's the coolest thing. Although I would say on the service side of thing, particularly on hospitality side, it's outside of London, and maybe Leanne, you'll agree, from up north, but I feel like the service that you get in some of the hotels that we've been to, and some of the small hotels as well as the big ones in Scotland, is different. And then in Ireland, there's a real culture of nurturing and looking after, making sure you're okay. Have you had enough? Do you want more? I will serve you a million times over before I look after myself. And that can't be replicated. Like Beck said, it's so unique to those countries and those cultures. And it's really difficult unless you were to take someone. That's why these concepts, people flock to these concepts, right? These international concepts in London, because you want to feel like you're sitting at the bar in New York. So you go to the Standard in King's Cross and you reminisce and you interact with these people. But when they nail their staff and the culture and the inclusivity, that's when it keeps you coming back for more. It's great when it works.
I interviewed the founder and CEO of Space 10, and they're the design agency for IKEA. It was his vision of, because I asked him, do you design and build with empathy? Do you somehow design for that? Because when you go to somewhere and someone gets you and they feel that emotional connection with you, you're like, oh my God, you know, and the way that he was talking about how you build empathy into the design process within the physical world is really interesting. So as we get into the final part of the show, what I would love to sort of to do is, if you cast your minds back to when you were starting out your careers, and if you could go back and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
I always think, for me, and it's so simple, really simple, but something that I think people kind of don't appreciate, but confidence. Like, I often, even today, I will, like we were just talking about, I'm constantly in the room and I'm the only female in that room, and I'm constantly doubting myself. I'm nervous. I'm just to even speak out. And then I look back and I think, why the bloody hell did I think that? Like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
And if I just had a bit more confidence back then, I mean, I definitely have more confidence now than I did 10 years ago. You know, I think, it just having that belief and that confidence in yourself that people do want to listen to what you're saying. And if they don't, then they shouldn't be in the room.
Brilliant advice. Erin, Bex, who would like to go next?
I wish that I could go back and tell myself that it's okay to fail and to make mistakes, and that I think it's fair enough to say that all three of us are perfectionists in our outside of work, inside of work, like, you know, our personalities are freakishly aligned, and it's okay that you won't get it right the first time, and it's okay to make a mistake. And I think this whole wave of embrace your failures, you know, we're all big fans of Elizabeth Day and her whole mentality towards failure. Embrace it, like, go with it, make mistakes, ask the questions. Don't be afraid to ask a question. It's the best piece of advice I've ever had. And I would encourage everyone to ask as many questions as you possibly can, because then your chances of failing or getting it wrong are going to be minimized. And then if you do still make a mistake or fail, or however you want to look at it, then you will still look back on that and think, if I didn't do that, then I wouldn't be where I am today. And it is a really hard to stay in that positive mindset. I mean, particularly over the last 9 months, it's been really difficult, but we all have to think we're going to come out of this. We had a whole episode around resilience. And I think it really, it took us all by surprise how much we wanted to talk about that topic, aside from retail and aside from the day to day, how it has affected us and how we will change going forward. But I just wish someone had said to me, you will fail, it will be okay, don't be afraid, don't beat yourself up and think, what could I have done differently, because you can't change it.
Yeah, brilliant. Bex?
I think perhaps similar to what Leanne said, I was asked this question at the beginning of the year for an event that I was part of, and I remember thinking to myself, shall I answer as a sort of professional and be, you know, be really cookie cutter and say something, you know, very vanilla? Should I tell them the truth? And I decided to say exactly what was on my mind. And I remember saying something along the lines of, if only you could care a little bit less about what people think of you. Like, you're an opinionated foreign woman working in real estate in the UK. People are going to have opinions. People are not going to like you. And that is A-okay. And, you know, to Leanne and Erin's point too, I think having that confidence and knowing that it's okay to fail, it's okay to make mistakes, you will make mistakes, but everyone around you also does. And I wish I could have been a bit more confident in that regard and be surer about myself and who I was and my identity in a world, you know, as we were saying before, basically full of men, where there's not a lot of representation, I would say.
So. Sorry to cut across you, but I have to ask, how much of, because this is all about celebrating female leaders, and I do see you, the three of you, as leaders, but how much of does gender play a part in your everyday life?
I'd say for me, and I do think we do differ on this, actually, the three of us, but for me, I'm so proud of being a woman, and I'm so proud of myself, because, you know, I've come from absolutely nothing in that respect and sort of dragged myself to where I am today. Yeah. And yeah, I've had to try harder than the next person next to me. And yeah, it annoys me and it can really, really get me down certain days. But actually, on the face of it, I do have positivity that we're moving into a world where it doesn't matter what sex you are. You know, the guys of our generation or a bit younger don't have the same opinions as the ones that were perhaps above us.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's for everyone. I understand. Nodding.
Yeah.
But I want to be optimistic about the world in that respect. And I don't mind having to try a bit harder sometimes, because, you know what, I'm better for it, and I know that. I know I'm better than my counterparts in lots of things, and that's okay. I'm kind of okay with it. But the thing that really upsets me is like the gender pay gap and those kind of things, and where I know there have been instances where I have been overlooked over a man who's not as good as me, and I know that's happened, and that will probably happen again at some point in my career, but I'm not going to stop trying, and I'm going to keep going, because yeah, I'll be better.
It's so true. Our struggles make us stronger, and yeah, I think that's the one, you know, if I could, all of the struggles that we all go through, we'd definitely end up in such a better place afterwards. Bex, Erin.
Erin is looking at me to say something. I'm probably the furthest apart in terms of opinion on this one to both Erin and Leanne. I think I agree with what you're saying, Leanne. I just, the fact that we are moving in the right direction doesn't necessarily mean that we don't have to keep talking about when things are not right. And I kind of sit more in that camp of where other people might think it's cringe to talk about feminism and the pay gap and you know, the struggles that we go through as women. I don't think it's cringe. I like to talk about it, and I like to call it out when I see it, because I genuinely think that's the only way. It's the only way to shock people into understanding what is right and what is wrong, especially when you think of men that are, and I don't want to put an age onto this, but just let's just say older generations where, let's face it, they've grown up in a world where they used to go into offices and women only did one kind of job, and it was administrative, right? And they've obviously, in their careers, they've seen that transition of women into the workplace in ways that probably they couldn't have fathomed. So I understand.
Oops.
Coming in, why, you know, how could they possibly think that we are anything but equal? So I'm probably more in the camp of, you know, being more opinionated and being more vocal about it.
Thank you. I don't know why I've adopted like a counselling session voice. Thanks for sharing. That must be quite tough. Thank you for, you know, it's just like, I've got to be honest, I struggle with it, right? And I don't know what to say, how to say it. But the only thing I know is that I need to say something, right? And the whole, and I think the Black Lives Matter thing, if there's anything that you can do in terms of allyship, you need to demonstrate. And the first step to that is to talk about it. And that's it. But sorry, Erin, in my non-counselling voice, what do you think?
My view on it is that I was brought up by parents where mum and dad were very much equals in the house. And between me and my siblings, brothers and sisters, we're all treated exactly the same. And we were all encouraged to quite simply treat someone how you would like to be treated.
Yeah.
And I think that's been instilled in all of us. And so when I went to, I've always been around men and worked with men. I went to a local mixed secondary school. I went to a university where it was 99% men in the property undergraduate degree, shocker. And then when I turned up at CBRE, there was majority men. And it never really shocked me until I seen it happen with my own eyes and my own ears. And I thought, I have to speak out on this because I wouldn't want someone to treat me like this. So I have spoken out about it. And I think for me, it just feels like that's the biggest thing. I can't just sit back and let this happen. I need to ask, if I've been overlooked, then why? And how can this change? And I think going forward, if we don't have the confidence to do that as women, and if that's not instilled in us from a very young age, which fortunately it has been with me, then where else are you going to get that? And maybe going back to Bex's point, mentors and senior leaders, men and women, if they're encouraging people to treat people fairly and to speak out when it hasn't happened and to talk about it rather than keeping it in and snowball in effect and turning into this huge issue, then we're not going to make any progress.
Yeah, I love it.
Everyone needs to look out for everyone. I think now more than ever, we have to go back into the workplace and think, how are we all going to get on with this in this whole new world? And I think we all have to start speaking out for people, making sure that people are treated fairly. And that's the only way is to call people out.
You all have a wonderful way of talking and a wonderful way of sort of expressing your stories, and I just think it's lovely to be able to share an hour with you to be on that journey with you. So I look forward to the podcast growing. So I'll be your number one fan. I'll be what's the podcast? You haven't got a website yet. I noticed you've got an Instagram page, but you do have an email as well.
Yes, yeah, we do.
So
info@retailisdead.co.uk.
Thank you. And what's the Instagram hashtag or Instagram tag?
@retailisdead_. Yeah.
And you have to teach me how you've managed to get to Spotify number one search when I type in retail. How have you done that? Because every time I type retail, you guys come up first.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
Yeah.
Feel free to tell all your sponsorship friends.
Yes.
Particularly End Clothing.
Oh, God. If you guys manage to somehow wrangle a discount there, please don't forget me. Okay. Just I'll come with you. I'm happy for like a 10, 20%
type of
thing. Yeah.
We got
you. And we didn't do favorite coffee shops and thing, but maybe hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to each other again. And you can give me your favorite spots in London.
Of course.
Thank you so much once again.
Have a nice weekend.
You too.
Thanks, Sally.
See you later.
Bye.
The Retail Podcast, a global conversation hosted by Alex Rezvan-Bienetz.